Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
It's perhaps unfortunate, but competence on the job is usually not enough. Even if you're an individual contributor, but especially if you're on a team, you're managing a team, you supervise people, or you've got to manage your boss, personality matters a lot. Not just in being well-liked and thus more likely to get promoted and less likely to get let go, but to influence people's behavior and maybe even influence your organization's policies and practices. While some of our personality is hardwired, enough isn't to justify a segment on developing your personality. And with me to share some ideas on how to do that is my frequent co-conspirator on this show and my wife, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools and winner of 9 national awards for her work, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Welcome as usual.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good. So why don't you start us off with one of your favorite tips on how to develop your personality, especially something that might help you in the workplace?
Well, I think life is very stressful today. And each of us comes to work every day bringing with us a whole host of issues that are going on at home with our kids, our spouses, our parents, whatever. It's really important that you try to leave the rest of it outside of work. When you come to work, that's not a good time to start airing all of your problems, all of your issues. You need to compartmentalize. Come into work, you're here to do a job, and try to put on the best possible face you can.
You know, I know that can be seen as cold, but it's true that in many ways, people who have had a problemed home life see work as an escape. And if you can view it as a way to kind of escape from your personal life, you will both feel probably more relieved, and you won't be seen as one of these people who is ever complaining. For me, the best example of this was Bill Clinton. You know, he was accused of the most embarrassing things, front page for day after day, but according to all reports, whether you liked him or not, he was apparently, it had no effect on his work life. He was able to compartmentalize. So I think that's a nice under-the-radar one, because we don't think of that as part of your personality, but really it affects your personality enormously. I like that. You got another one for us?
Yeah. I think you want to share the good parts of your personality, and everybody has different good parts, and it's hard to separate your personality from who you are, your life. People like cheerful people. People like funny people. That doesn't mean you need to come in and become a stand-up comedian. But if you happen to have a wry sense of humor, that's fine. People love to laugh. And again, none of this means that you're going to be some different person or that you're never going to talk about anything that's going on at home. But as you begin a job, it's really important that you're seen as someone who is friendly. That means you come in with a smile and a big good morning, even if you have to fake it till you make it. Maybe you didn't have a good morning. But nobody wants to be greeted in the morning by someone who comes in looking like a cloudburst.
I'm agnostic on that. I mean, yes, you don't want to, you know, come in as like a cloudburst. But I know there's such variation in people, and I hate to think that we have to turn into these, you know, and that's one of the digs on corporate America. You must be pleasantly perky all the time. There is a tremendous difference in people. Some people, and the stereotype is the techies, the engineers in Silicon Valley, who are very introverted. They're not about connection or being perky, but they're amazing at what they do. And some people are, you know, are funsters, and some people are don't like chit-chat and like to get back down to work. Some are all about feelings and all, you know, and others are all data-driven. There's a piece of me that says that, you know, we claim to celebrate diversity, and yet in reality, of course, you're right, that we have very little tolerance for anything other than the mildly pleasant person all the time. So I think I need, though, to counter your probably pragmatic advice to err on the side of mild positivity, but to balance that by saying, if you really are a quiet, shy introvert, that you shouldn't feel this is something you've got to do. Yes, you want to be reasonably pleasant and say hi. You maybe make a little bit of effort to make small talk in the break room or whatever. But if you are an introvert and just want to quietly do your work, I think we don't want to give the message you can't be your authentic self. What do you think of that, Barb?
Nobody's saying that you have to run around the office shrieking joy. But when you come in the morning, a smile, a pleasant smile, a good morning, a hello, if you are a quiet person, that's fine. You can go right to your desk and sit down and do your work. I'm not saying you have to run around the office bringing good cheer. But when you come in with a sour face and you don't make eye contact and you don't look like you're glad to be there, people want to avoid you. So I think it's worth the effort to put yourself in the mindset that I'm in a play now, I'm walking into the building, and I'm going to look like a regular, normal, happy person, and then I'll just do my work.
All right, I'm going to try to build on that and create a corollary. You know, in every workplace, you know, we know that yes men, yes women tend to get ahead, and but I find that anathema. So I do think there is a time to criticize, although usually in private, whether it be to a supervisor or your boss. But I think in general, unfortunately, and this is a California thing, it's certainly not a New York thing as much, to survive, your personality needs to err toward positivity. Looking for, you know, giving earned, not unearned, but earned, unearned attaboys and attagirls to people, write personal notes, you know, looking in a meeting for an opportunity to agree or amplify on what somebody says, but reserving the right, having built up a reservoir of relative positivity, when it is important for you to disagree, it may be appropriate not only to disagree, although you try to do it tactfully, but sometimes even stick to your guns. I had my last client right before I came here is a senior executive of a major healthcare organization, and his boss wants to hire another doctor, a urologic surgeon who is apparently great. Well, this guy is my client, is the CFO, and he says, you know, it's all well and good, but this is not an area of practice we're trying to grow in. We are in deep doo-doo. We're losing a lot of money. You know, I know it's a nice, shiny object, but I think we shouldn't do it. And his boss said, no, I think we should do it. Sometimes, and I don't think this was an example of it, you want to go to the mat. And we agreed that he shouldn't go to the mat on this one, but there's even some cases. Like if his healthcare organization is at the risk of going bankrupt, which it is, that when there is a big spend and he's really convinced that it's not right, you can be as negative as you want. But my large point is err toward positivity. Generally, when you have to disagree, do it tactfully and do it once. And if you get rebuffed, let it go. But there is the occasional time that, lest you be seen as a milquetoast, you've got to stand up. I mean, lest I be talking too long, there's one other point I want to make. Warren Buffett, I'm reading the biography of Warren Buffett, the most authoritative one. It's called Snowball. And my guest on this show, she will be coming on the show next month. But it's a very fat book, so I've been starting early. And he is somebody who is, despite being one of the richest people in the world, very conflict avoidant and definitely erring on the side of being positive. But there was one thing he found that he couldn't stand it, and it's a little in the weeds, but until about 10 years ago, companies that paid stock options didn't have to record it as an expense on their books. And he thought that was very unfair. And so he actually went to the media and fought all of Silicon Valley because he believed it was right. So my point is, normally the personality that works in the workplace errs toward positivity. When you've got to make something be critical, do it once and do it tactfully, except when you feel it's really worth going to the mat. Barbara, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that conflates a whole lot of stuff. What I was talking about is when you come in the morning, this is how you come in. I was not talking about if you have a disagreement with a policy.
I was saying I said it was a corollary to your point. I didn't say it was your point, Barb.
Okay. Excuse me.
Okay. I mean, I went in this great detailed thing. It was nothing other than to say that it wasn't my point. What's your reaction to the point I just made?
I think that doesn't reflect most people's position in the workplace. where you're seeing something that could bankrupt your company.
Well, not about bankrupt. I mean, you could certainly, but something where you see something you believe is important. You know, that I'm saying err on the side of positivity. Make an objection. Usually do it once tactfully, but occasionally there's going to be the time you want to stand up. Do you have any reaction to that?
I think it depends on how you do it. If there's something happening, and let's say it's discussed at a meeting, this is not a good time to come out with a, I'm standing firm on this is just wrong, because now you're embarrassing a whole lot of people who are in that meeting who may have contributed to the decision or the desire to go in a certain direction. So what you might do is say quietly, that's interesting. I wonder, though, do you think that given that our financial position is insecure right now and this is a big expenditure, we may want to think about, is there a better way to improve our financial position than making this additional hire? Then if you don't get a good reaction to that, that's when you shut up.
Okay.
And then at some later time, you can write up a couple of bullet points and just give it to your boss privately.
Okay. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. We're talking about ways to develop your personality, especially as it pertains to the workplace. I'm going to invite you to call in. If you have a reaction to anything we've said, or you have a suggestion about how to develop your personality, especially as it pertains to the workplace, I invite you to call here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Do you have another tip you want to give? You want me to give one?
Yes. A lot of times there are sort of large things that are going on, an event, let's say. There are some people in the office who are planning for a major event. And when you're doing that, there's a lot of detail that goes into it, and it's not necessarily high-level detail, but it's important for the event to be successful. And people can get stressed. If at all possible, people love the colleagues who say, can I help you? What can I do? I'm here if you need me. Even though it's not their job. I've seen that happen again and again and again, and everybody feels so good about the employee. A lot of times they won't even take you up on it. But the fact that you offered is so important, and if they say yes, it's a wonderful thing. It lightens the load for everybody, and then everybody feels good.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. I agree. It reminds me of something that I always very often tell my clients, especially when I feel like they're in that interim period where they're confused, things aren't really clear. I tell the client at the end of the session, I say, you know, I don't want you to just think I'm here for you just as your ally during our hour. So if you have a question that you think I might be able to answer by email sometime between now and our next session, feel free to email me. And they always appreciate that. They rarely take advantage of it. But as you say, it kind of makes them feel good to have offered to step in and help it go beyond a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have another one? Or you want to hear one from me?
Why don't you do one, and I'll get my next one ready.
Fair enough. So I want to talk about, you know, very often we develop our personalities or we demonstrate our personalities when we're in a conversation. Some of the things are very, very, you know, are very fixable. I've tried to focus on the things that aren't so foundationally a personality. I will never be laid back. I will never be somebody who is inordinately tactful. But there are some things that can be fixed, like posture. Having a good posture is seen as being confident. And when you're in conversation, unless you really know the person well, you don't want to stand face to face to them. You want to stand at about a 30-degree angle, but turn your head so that you're having eye contact roughly 2/3 of the time. Because if you stare all the time, it's looking a little psychotic. What do you think about that, Barb?
Oh, I completely agree. You have to be sure that you're not in their personal space. And when you're standing face to face, it's more likely to happen than when you have that angle between you. You don't want to be staring into their eyes. Yes, it would make anybody nervous. You seem like a serial killer. I think that's a totally important thing. And I think you want to always be careful not to be dominating in conversation. You always use the traffic light rule, and it's a good rule. You don't want to just keep talking. You want to give the other guy a chance to say something.
Yeah, there's two versions of that. One is the traffic light rule, which is, yes, in the first 30 seconds of an utterance, your light's green, they're listening, they don't think you're a blowhard. Second 30 seconds, it's yellow. And after 60 seconds, you usually have reached a red light and you need to stop, unless you're telling a really interesting story. But there's another nuance to it that I like to, that's a kind of a rule of thumb that's helpful. It's called the 30-50 rule. Normally, and of course, it's going to vary with the conversation, but in general, you want to talk 30 to 50% of the time and have the other person talk 50 to 70. Of course, all rules of thumb are broken. There are times a person really likes to be a listener, or there's times you really have so much to say, or sometimes you have very little to say and you may want to be in a listening mode. But it can't hurt, you know, in terms of people being perceived as having a good personality, not being egotistical, and yet not being a wimpy milquetoast, to be, yes, talking 30 to 50% of the time, and to keep your utterances between 30 seconds or 10 seconds and a minute. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I'd like to go back to your point about posture.
Okay.
I think posture is very important. You talked about confidence, and that's true. It's obviously better for you. It's not good for your body if you're all hunched over. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, when you are hunched over, it makes you look a lot older.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look a lot older, that's another obstacle to overcome in the workplace.
Absolutely.
If you stand straight and tall, it's better for you. You'll feel better. You'll breathe better.
Agree.
You'll exude confidence, and you'll look younger. And who can argue with that?
I agree. One more little example of that, of the body stuff before we leave that, and then we're going to go to the phones. Crossing your arms. Crossing your arms is distancing. It makes you look, and I'm amazed that even some publicity photos show the author or whatever with their arms crossed. It says, I don't want to connect with you, and, you know, that's something to avoid. And when you see somebody else doing it, especially, you know, some people are just insecure and so they're going to do it all the time. But if you notice a change, if somebody is normally, or you're in a conversation and the conversation is maybe talking small talk or on nothing controversial and their arms aren't crossed, and then suddenly their arms are crossed, you may have done something to make them feel defensive, and therefore you need to beware. I'll give out the phone number again, then we're going to go to the phones. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko here at KALW. We are talking about ways to develop your personality, especially as it applies to the workplace. If you either have a question that you'd like to ask us that this has triggered, or you have your own tip or idea regarding enhancing your personality in the workplace, the phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Marty. This is Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Oakland, long-time listener. So I'm a little bit of an introvert, but that doesn't mean I'm shy.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem if in a meeting I kind of know my role very well.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a number of times when I have been in meetings with executives that are 2 to 3 levels above me,
mm-hmm.
and been called on to maybe, I don't know, give an opinion where I might have to call someone out for failing to do a job. How do you say to best handle that? Because I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I definitely want to make sure that it doesn't look like I'm the person who is at fault for something. How do you think I best handle that?
Barbara, you want to try it first? You want me to? It's up to you completely, Barb.
Well, I certainly would not throw anybody under the bus at a meeting. That would not be a good idea, in my mind. Maybe Marty will disagree with me.
I think I do, but go ahead.
Okay, well then, let's hear.
Right. So, everything is situational, and forgive me for sounding wishy-washy, but, and I know you're introverted, but it depends. If the person is somebody who deep down you believe from a, I know this sounds high and mighty, but from a cosmic perspective, this person deserves to be thrown under the bus, either because they really need a wake-up call, this is not the first time, they're really having a terrible negative effect on the organization, maybe on the quality of products or whatever, driving everybody crazy, you know, that may be appropriate to throw them on the bus, but that's usually the exception. If the person is asking you about somebody who's been a shirker, you know, California really is about being indirect. you'll get the point across without saying, boy, this guy's lazy, hasn't shown up three times in a row. To say something like, you know, there have been a bit of an issue, you know, using the word bit, literally you don't mean a bit, you mean major, but in Californianese, when you say there's been a bit of an issue around, you know, timeliness, and then shut up, gets the point across. After the meeting, then there's plenty of time for that boss to come to you or for you to go to the boss. So you need probably, especially as an introvert, to use what I call California couching so you can get the point across if you feel it's appropriate. If you don't think it's appropriate to throw them on the bus at the meeting, say, you know, I'm a little ambivalent about the subject. I don't have much to say about it in this forum. That also gets the point across that there's something to be said without literally throwing them under the bus. Dear caller, okay. Dave, what's your reactions to our reactions?
So I think you guys are exactly on point. I guess the problem, it's not that the coworkers are necessarily doing anything wrong.
I see.
This is more of like a structural problem where there was a miscommunication between people. Maybe someone forgot to send an email to someone. It was nothing intentional. So it's more of a problem where if I point something out, I don't want to seem like...
Oh, no, you don't want to do that. I was thinking it was much more serious. No. You want to say there was a little glitch that is not significant, not likely to repeat itself, and I just don't think it's worth exploring, period. And I think, you know, one of my favorite words in the world of work is crisp. Not everything requires a long production. That's why people go nuts at meetings. Everything gets drawn out. So if somebody's asking you about something, why didn't she get this email? You know, I would say there was a minor glitch, nothing that is really structural. If it is structural, say, you know, our process is a little too convoluted. I wonder if we could skip a step. Do we really need three signatures to blow your nose here? That was kind of a joke. I wouldn't probably, in most of the typical serious workplaces, they would consider that being flip. But, you know, saying, you know, maybe our process is a bit convoluted. Is it possible we could do this with just one signature? It would really improve efficiency. So if it's a structural thing, there's nothing wrong. You're not throwing anybody under the bus. You're just making a crisp comment that might improve the process. And then I always, in California couching, you always end, well, and what do you think? That way you're not sounding like a know-it-all, but you're merely throwing out an idea. What do you think?
Gotcha. No, I think that sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
All right. Again, if you, dear listeners, if you have a either a question about your personality as manifested at work and how to be more successful in manifesting your personality at work or enhancing it, or you have a tip that you'd like to offer regarding enhancing your personality at work, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barb, do you want to offer another tip on developing your personality?
I think if you can find something nice to say, say it. People love compliments.
Yep.
It can be as simple as, that color looks wonderful on you.
Right.
Or, you look especially nice today.
But men can't do that. Men that talk to a woman cannot say, gee, you're looking great. I think that, except unless you really know the person well, today's Me Too environment, there is additional risk that accrues when a man does it to a woman that doesn't accrue when a woman does it to a man. Do you agree?
I think that's a really good point. But there are other compliments that men can make.
That's correct. That's correct.
And so that was a really good point you made at that meeting yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Look for things that you can use to say something nice to somebody. People always appreciate a compliment.
And so this is an amplification. Again, amplification is a great way to make people feel validated and enhance your perceived personality. So you're saying say something nice. Well, also writing something nice. People love handwritten notes. If you're a supervisee, write a handwritten note that they could then hang on the refrigerator, show to the people at home. And secondly, and I know we disagreed about it, it was the only thing we talked about in preparing for the show together, we prepared independently, is I believe that a clearly not sexual 1 second touch can be very powerful and make you seen as more nicer and more in control. So that if I am, for example, if I am saying to somebody, and it could, even if I'm a man, heaven forbid, and it's a woman, and I say, you made a really good point, and for 1 second I touch her forearm and that's it, I think there is not only nothing wrong with it, I think it's a plus. What do you think?
Hey, Vice President Biden, I'd reconsider that.
Well, he's Biden
agree
is
with
worse.
You.
That's different.
I think this whole thing is ridiculous.
Of course,
I really do.
I know.
I don't think he did anything.
Well, apparently he was smelling women's hair. That's different. I'm talking about
you still don't want anyone to have anything that they can then create.
I know.
This.
I know.
Though you touch someone on their arm,
I know.
These days, everybody's offended at everything. I would keep my hands to myself.
They may not be offended, but they then see it as a power opportunity. If they, let's say, you know, I have seen this happen where a person was very not competent and lazy, and she built up a case based on nothing, but because he once bumped into her in the hall, a guy bumped in, and she went to HR and said, he shouldered me, it was physically hostile to me, and he had no real defense. And, you know, we were in an era of zero tolerance around this. And so we really, the tension between the sexes in my 30 years as a career counselor has never been higher. I used to hug my, certainly when, especially we had a powerful session, I would hug my clients, male, but especially female, because it's just, it was more normative. I will not hug a client now. If she reaches out to me, I will give her the 1 second platonic hug where I tap her back, you know, while I'm doing it. But the world has changed dramatically.
Absolutely. That,
not just mine, but what I'm seeing my clients experience in their workplaces. So
absolutely. Again, after a while, when you, I hugged a colleague today, but I've known her for 15 years.
Oh, that's different. Women can hug women. There's complete double standard regarding
right.
this.
That is true. And so I think when it's a man and a woman, I would be incredibly careful about
right.
that. In fact, I just wouldn't do it.
I know. Okay. Anyway, another, I'm going to offer a tip that I think is a way to enhance your personality as perceived in a workplace. Every human being, male, female, anywhere on the, we're not binary anymore. We are on a continuum. Any human being has hot, what I call hot buttons. It's a little bit of an indiscreet term, but things that they care profoundly about.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something like they hate Donald Trump, or it could be they're worried about their mental health or physical health. It could be they love their children to death and everything is their family. It could be the Golden State Warriors. It could be, they're interested in money, or they love the stock market, or they're like you and I, we love the theater and the arts. By finding and talking about their hot button issues, really listening and focusing, really showing genuine interest with good follow up questions, without denying your own interest. It's not that you can't talk about what interests you, but by not being so self absorbed. Again, there is the old Rabbi Hillel had the statement: "If I am not for me, who will be? But if I'm only for me, what am I?" So striking that balance in focusing on both your own interests and your needs, but looking for, really having your antenna out for each individual's what I call hot buttons, and making sure to address those things. If a person is pregnant, I guess that has to be a woman. If a woman is pregnant, asking her about that, and if she wants to change the topic, she doesn't want to talk about it, maybe she hates being pregnant, drop it. But very often, women who are pregnant like talking about their upcoming baby. So personality today, more than ever, is about amazing emotional sensitivity to what people like and are people are offended to, and really not always capitulating, but certainly not being in your own little world and focusing hard on what they want, and that will make you perceived as having a good personality. You buy that, Barb?
Mm-hmm. And before I would discuss the pregnancy with a woman, I'd be damn sure I knew she was really pregnant.
That's right. There are plenty of people who may look pregnant. Yeah, that's dangerous.
You don't want to make that mistake.
Fair enough.
And when is the baby due? What?
Oh,
I'm
my God.
Pregnant?
You're right. Good point. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind?
I think generalizations are good to a degree, but my experience is that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I've run into enough relatively neurotic managers in my lifetime that seems to me that that trying to feel them out for a while and then adjust yourself to them is the best way to go.
Absolutely, and it's true not just of managers. You know, there is neuroticism and difficulty all up and down the ladder. I mean, people not, you know, we all tend to like to bash managers because we dislike hierarchy in this day and era. But, you know, people get to be managers in general because they are, on average, harder workers, smarter, etc. So that applicability of your advice to before you get too involved with any worker, really try to be careful and tentative and feel them out is true whether you're dealing with your supervisees, your peers, or your bosses. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, certainly. And, I mean, I recall, I think there was some kind of a study a while ago. They found that a majority of CEOs were basically psychopaths. And so the folks...
That is the kind of, you know, the older I get, and I have a PhD that is specialized in evaluation of programs and research. The more I hear, the older I get and the more studies I've read over these decades, the more I have become very cynical about studies that defy reason. There is a tremendous amount of, there's an enormous antipathy, especially in the academy, against leadership. So there may well be conscious or unconscious bias on the part of the researchers to want to describe the leadership as psychopathic. It doesn't pass my common sense, nor I've had a ton of clients who are executives, CFOs, CEOs, CTOs, and CEOs, and I haven't met one who's a psychopath. They're driven. They work long hours. They're aggressive. They're competitive. They like to win. But psychopath? I mean, you know, that's the kind of thing we really do need to realize, alas, every one of us has biases, whether it's a media you're listening to or an academic study or Marty Nemko or Barbara Nemko. If what somebody says or even a, quote, study reports something that doesn't comport with common sense, we really need to take a hard look before we render these judgments. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. So the best example I could think of, I guess, is Donald Trump. So many folks have resigned, et cetera.
I understand. Anyway, that's getting a little political and off topic. I understand, you know. Again.
But I do agree with the point that you do want to take a lot of time to feel out the people that you report to. They'll have some personality quirks. Yeah. And you want to be careful around those quirks. And if you can identify what they are, that's going to give you a leg up in knowing how to get along with them.
Listener, thanks for the call. Barbara Nemko, you are the CEO of an organization with 200 employees. You have a multi-million-dollar budget. And because you are the longest-serving school superintendent among all the 48 counties, I believe.
No, 58 counties, and I'm number two,
number two,
clear.
Okay. But the point is, you know, you've known not only one generation of superintendents, but you've known multiple generations of superintendents. Mm-hmm. How many of them would you describe as psychopathic?
I got one. Yeah.
Out of how many?
Oh, my God. Hundreds.
So, I mean, study the majority of CEOs are psychopaths.
No.
It just defies common sense. Dear listeners, please don't let PhDs or the word study trump common sense. Pardon the pun around Trump. But anyway, okay. Phone number again, now I'm going to broaden. Either if you have a question or comment regarding developing your personality, or if you would like a workover, that is a core function of this show. For almost 30 years now, I do Barbara and I both do, what are called workovers. But I guess I'm saying me mainly because that's what I do for a living. I'm a career counselor. If you have any kind of work problem of any sort, whether you're unemployed or well-employed and still unhappy, whether you're 16 or 76, for-profit, non-profit, government, or self-employed, I invite you to call, and I will try to help you solve your problem. And something I've liked to do lately, and it's kind of fun, my latest book is Careers for Dummies, you know, those yellow and black dummies books published by Wiley, and I will give a free autographed copy to the first person who calls for a workover. All you'll need to do is, at the end of the call, don't hang up. Stay on the line and give your name and address to Joanne, our board operator, and I will send you an autographed copy forthwith. So, if you either want a workover or you've got a question or a comment regarding developing your personality at work, the phone number here at KALW and the show Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barbara, do you have another point you want to make about developing your personality?
Yes. I think it's wonderful to share something that you're particularly good at.
Yes.
If you happen to be a good cook or baker and you want to bring in some food, Everybody loves it when you bring in something.
It's one of your gifts. You do it all the time. You have used it. You have diffused so much tension, and I'm sure your personality is perceived better because you do bring in brownies. It's your secret weapon, or God knows whatever else. What have you brought? Think of all the things that you have brought into the Napa County Office of Education for food, for meetings, or the break room.
Oh, that, all kinds of stuff. And I don't always cook it myself. Sometimes I buy it. Mm. But food is a wonderful way. When you break bread with somebody,
yep,
you feel positive towards them.
It is a lubricant of conversation.
The other thing that you, I mean, it doesn't have to be just that. Mm-hmm. You grow flowers.
Right.
So you, when you worked in the school, you used to bring in vases of flowers and put them in the break room.
Absolutely.
Maybe you're artistic. Bring in some of your pictures. Hang them on your walls, and if somebody admires them, you might say, "What would you like to hang it in your office?" Or put it in a public, ask, of course, but put it in a public place, or put it in the restroom. Things that make the building or the space more attractive, make people happy.
Like photography.
So whatever is your gift, share it.
Yep. Okay, let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
And I'm 55 years old, and I've been working in the beauty industry for about 30-plus years. And I'm looking to kind of change what I'm doing now. I was looking at some things in the medical field. Just wanted something a little bit more stable. And just what I'm currently doing is just taking a lot of wear and tear as I'm getting older on my body. And so I'm just looking for a little more financial stability. And I was looking for, something in either phlebotomy or medical assisting.
Okay.
So I was wondering,
now,
what
phlebotomy is $20 an hour. Medical assisting is $18. What do you do in the beauty industry?
I'm a stylist.
Okay. What attracted you to these, phlebotomy? Again, phlebotomy is very low pay. As well as medical assisting, $18-$20 an hour, to my knowledge. I'm not a computer, but in my brain, that's the general ballpark. That's not a sustainable wage here in the Bay Area. But we may get some clues about what might be a better fit by your telling me what attracted you to those.
Well, to be honest, what really attracted me was that because of my age, I needed to get into something to transition into something quickly that wouldn't take me 3 or 4 years to study before I would be able to go work out in a field such as an RN, for example.
Right. The faster way to transition, though, would be to leverage on what you do. I want to now dig a little into what you've done as a stylist. Are you an expert at coloring? Are you more at customer relations? Do you good at upselling products? What are you organized at? Where is your interest and skills in the beauty world, in the hair stylist world?
Currently right now, I really like specializing in men's hair cutting.
Okay.
But there's not really a lot of money in that. So.
Right. Okay.
So.
And now there are niches, like, for example, in the area of wigs. I like to use age as your advantage. Unfortunately, as some people get older, they not only lose their hair naturally, but they have alopecia from cancer or other aging cardiovascular related diseases or whatever. It's clearly a higher paying and less volume, so you're not going to be on your feet. Had you ever thought about angling, since you like men's hair, but angling into that kind of an unusual specialty so that you could make more money in less hours?
No, I hadn't actually thought about that.
Does your honest opinion feel like you're sick of it, you don't want to do it, or is that appealing?
I'm open to listening what you have to say in regards to that, but another part of me is, I've been doing it for 30-plus years,
sure.
So I kind of want to do something different.
Okay. And again, you made it really clear you need short-term. So short-term tends to be either low pay or leveraging what you've done. Let me ask you this. The most typical route for somebody who's had 35 years of experience is finding some young person. It would be like, for example, either if you don't have the money, you find somebody to open a salon or buy a salon or buy some chairs, and you are training these young people to be good haircutters, whether you're working for this, you're getting a piece of their money, or you're working for one of the schools. There are some very high-priced and low-priced schools. I mean, 35 years of experience is a ton. You've developed all kinds of intuitions about people, the psychology. For some people, hair is so critical to their self-esteem. and reading between the lines of what they really want and what they don't want. Had you thought about teaching it either to people who are young people at your salon or at a salon you would buy or chairs you would rent, or at one of the many hair schools, whether it be Paul Mitchell or colleges have, I think Laney College has a haircutting program. Any of that appeal more, or do you like the alopecia concept, the wig concept?
I've done education before. I did enjoy that.
And if we were to look into a crystal ball and we were to project a year from now and you were teaching, where would you be teaching?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I really don't know what's out there in regards to that.
So well, if I said that, you need to look at both. So your takeaway for today is I'd like you to contact Paul Mitchell because I know they're a leading school. They have one in Pleasant Hill. They may have others. But also a community college, and talk to them and see to what extent you'd be in demand. And secondly, I also want you to find, you can just, Google alopecia services, wig services, medical hair, medical wigs, or whatever the hell it is, and the whatever city you live in, and talk to somebody who's in that biz. It's not going to be like there's certain fields that are so overcrowded. For example, like environmentalism, you can't get to talk to some executive in the environmental business, but you could. Nobody, the field of alopecia and medical wigs is not exactly hot, and so no doubt you'll be able to get to talk to somebody more easily. So by making those low risk actions, by talking to a few people, you'll either find that you want to do one of those or the other, or they may tell you about a path that I'm a general career counselor. I know a little bit about everything, a lot about nothing. But one of those people might know a lot about the world of hair in avenues that I couldn't even begin to contemplate. How does that feel?
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Thank you for calling Work With Mike Necker. Now, if you want a free copy of my book, you stay on the line and give your name and address to Joanne, and I will send it to you. All right. Take care. All our lines are lighted up. Let's go back to the phones as soon as we can. It might take a minute. Yes, it looks like we can. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. I noticed, Barbara, you were quieter, but I didn't think you had anything to say about that particular topic.
Nope. Right. No, I think you handled it wonderfully.
That's kind of what I do for a living. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What is your question for Barbara or me? Hi, it's you.
Hi. I have been at the same position for about 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an administrative assistant, receptionist kind of work. I don't mind it. I enjoy it, but I want to start looking at other opportunities without signaling that I don't like what I'm doing anymore.
Right. And your question is, how do you keep people from knowing?
Or maybe that's not the right strategy. I don't know.
Well, all things being equal, since you're not like dying to quit, you don't want to necessarily let your employer know, because you do increase your risk. There's no guarantees, but you increase your risk of potentially getting let go, I suppose. Do you think that's true? If your boss found out that you were considering looking at something else, would you lose your job? How likely would it be you'd lose your job?
I don't think it would be extremely likely. She's pretty reasonable.
Okay. Well, first question is, do you know the kind of job you're looking for, or you're in the initial broad exploratory stage at this point?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty broad, but something similar. Some administrative assistant, receptionist, sort of thing.
Normally, what people do is they start with the people close to them, and they ask for confidentiality. I mean, the people you know may know people at your workplace or whatever, but you say you stipulate or you start. I'll just role play. This is what it'd be. Let's say the person's name is Mary. I'm really happy. I'm an administrative assistant and receptionist at Blatt Organization, and I'm satisfied there, but I've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be not a bad time to explore what else might be out there. Probably the same kind of work, maybe just a different environment.
Yeah.
I prefer for my boss not to know that I'm looking, so if I could ask for your confidentiality. But might you know somebody who I should speak with? That's how I'd pitch it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that way your risk is really small, and most people get their next job through a network. Or, again, if you're worried, you probably don't want to post your LinkedIn profile and make it public, because then maybe your boss is going to check on you. So I wouldn't go that route first.
Okay.
Normally the best jobs are gotten from the inside, so using your network. But you could also, do work on your LinkedIn profile. and but set it for private. And that way you can, if some, if an employer is interested in seeing your resume and your LinkedIn profile, you can then give them the URL and they can get to your LinkedIn profile without your boss doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Cool. Barb, you have anything to add here or no?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's take one more call. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What is your question or comment for Barbara or me?
Hi. Mine is just a comment about the guy who's done hair for 35 years.
Yes.
I just learned about men getting a weave over their bald heads.
Right.
And you look like you really do have hair. That could cost a fortune, and I think he can make real good money doing that.
That's a really nice idea. We talked about the medical wigs, but yes, there's all kinds of hair implants and weaves and all that stuff, and that would might be a, you know, again, that would be a way, because he said he was taking a wear and tear on his body after 30 years doing it on his feet all day if you're just your standard hair cutter. But if you're doing some niche thing like that, you're not seeing as many patients, clients a day, and you're making more per hour. So I think that's an excellent suggestion. Sir, you are an honored member of the Work with Marty and Barbara Nemco workforce. I appreciate you very much. Thanks very much for offering that suggestion.
And thank you so much. Thanks.
Okay. Barb, we have a few minutes left. We've got about 10 minutes left. Do you have any other points you want to make? You want me to make any points about developing your personality?
Nothing that I think we haven't said already.
Okay. I'm going to make just, I'm going to talk, only one more that I'd like to make. And this is something, I am a hypocrite because I don't follow what I do here, but this is what I'd be doing if I was best practice. People hate to be interrupted. I remember when I had one of the leading sports agents in the world on the show, and he said to me that one of the rules he never breaks is he never, ever interrupts, both because it's rude and sometimes what people will say after they are struggling a bit is often the most useful thing. So, but I have generally found that if I'm at my best, I am conscious about when to interrupt and not. I just don't interrupt viscerally and I don't have a blanket rule. There are some people who are long-winded and really appreciate being interrupted because they know they're kind of, they've lost their focus. Other people, even if they're not, they don't want to be interrupted. You know, it's, I have the right to have my needs met too. And if it's really frustrating, listen to some Joe Blowhard or Chatty Cathy go on at length. I have needs too that are entitled to be met. So I am nuanced about, I try when I'm at my best, I try to decide consciously when to interrupt, but try to err on the side not only of not interrupting, but people love it when you don't jump in the first nanosecond they finish talking. If you take a half a second or a second after they finish, they feel heard, like you're processing what they're saying. It's not like you're just waiting to jump in. What is your reaction to my little mini lecture about interrupting?
I think if you force yourself to not respond immediately, you'll do a better job of really listening to what's being said. Most of the time, we don't listen. We think ahead to our next comment. And if you say to yourself, no, I'm not going to do that, I am going to wait, I think you will have a more intelligent comment to make because you will have processed everything that was said before. And you're right. People will feel, they won't feel like you were just waiting to get your turn in.
I have to say there's a maybe. I think it's impossible to not think ahead. The mind thinks much faster than people speak. So I think it is, in most cases, we're going to think ahead. That doesn't preclude your still defaulting to not interrupting and, if possible, waiting a half second or a second. You buy my little clarification there?
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I think we've beaten this develop your personality thing to death. I'll give out the phone number one more time. Then I've got something I want to get your reactions to, Barb. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. If you want to work over, that is, you need some help with your work life, whatever it is, frankly, the more difficult, the better. This is the last time I'm giving out the phone number, so if you're like millions of procrastinators waiting until the last second, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I had a wonderful conversation with a guy named Nick Loper, who does a radio show called Side Hustle, and he has a website called SideHustleNation.com. And I had the conversation because I was trying him out to see if he should have be a guest on the show. And he did fine. And then when I told him it was 7 o'clock at night, he said, you know, my family is first. I can't do it. That's when we have dinner or when I'm going to be with my family. So, but what I did was I took notes in the conversation, and I some of his favorite side hustles I want to share with you. So I'm going to give one now, and then we got calls on the line, so we'll go to the phones in a minute. But Barbara, I want to get your reaction to this. He talked about somebody who made good money buying stuff at a flea market, including things like everything ranging from an artificial limb to a Husqvarna sander, a very high-end sander. He's sometimes even buying stuff at Walmart and then reselling on eBay or Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Any reactions to that?
I know a lot of people are doing things like that.
Wow. Okay. We've got more, but I always like to prioritize my dear listeners, so let's do that. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is on your mind? Hello, it's you. Are you there?
Me?
Yes, it is you. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am well. What gives me the honor of the call?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about the listening and interruption. I feel that I agree with Barbara. When we listen very carefully about somebody's concern, even though we could be experts in certain area, we respond better if we listen to what people are saying.
That's great. I thank you for weighing in. I'm more than happy. You know, I think we're in such an intolerant era. So I'm more than happy to be disagreed with. But notice he did it politely. He did it concisely. It wasn't attacking. We've really got to stop with I really have seen the tension level. Everybody is at a fever pitch. They're just on a hair trigger, ready to either explode, or if they're passive-aggressive, explode in their passive-aggressive way. I love disagreement when it's respectful, as this caller was, and so I thank the call. Barbara, here's another one of these side hustles that Nick Loper of Side Hustle Nation talked about. A notary signing service. It is easy to get. And this guy has met a number of people who are making like $1,500 a month. You don't get rich doing this, but it's the kind of thing you make $1,500 or more a month in the first year. And the key is, apparently, there are what are called signing services, where, if, for example, a complicated real estate closing, they may need 10 or 15 signatures, and they want the person to come to the office. You know, it's not like you mm-hmm. go to the, mm-hmm. you know. And so, and it's kind of a no-brainer activity. It doesn't require exactly a high IQ. So it's kind of a side hustle that I wouldn't have thought of. Barbara, any reaction to that one?
I don't like the idea of calling it a side hustle. Hustle sounds like you're doing something wrong, providing a service.
That's a young
somebody needs to have something notarized. They need to have it notarized.
People under 40, that's not viewed as side hustle means it's a job you're doing on the side to try to make ends meet.
As you may have noticed, I'm not under 40.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another one. Making YouTube videos where you're teaching something that you give for free the first course, and then they upsell. So, for example, there are some guys who who are apparently making great money teaching people how to create a herb business or a microgreen business. You know, those lettuces and radicchio and whatever, and they have the introductory little course for free on YouTube or lesson, and then they charge whatever $100. For the remaining lessons, and also somebody who did it with piano lessons, who said, "We'll teach you how to play by ear, and here is the first lesson for free, and there are 10 more lessons." Any comments on that?
As long as you tell them up front,
of course,
I'm giving you the first two lessons for free.
Well, they get it free. There's no obligation,
yeah.
So they get it
then
free, and
fine.
Then they get the upsell
sure.
at the end of the first lesson. Okay, we have calls on. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What is your question?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Hold on a second. Let me turn the radio off.
Yes, thank you.
I am... you were referring earlier about the posture. Well, at work and talking to a person. I happen to work in retail, and I am quite aged, actually. And I do have some posture issues. Mm-hmm. That's true because of the age and because mm-hmm. of the... my nature, and I was trying to correct that, but during the work time, I kind of tend to lose control, mm-hmm. so I have to remind myself all the time. And the other hand, I am a little bit taller sometimes than the other people, and I have to kind of lean a little bit closer to them.
Sure.
Listen what they say. And also my face change, I got some spots. I went to a dermatologist. I asked to correct. It takes some time. It's going to be some surgery involved. So, you know, I just like to know your opinion about this.
Barbara, you have something to say about that?
Let me turn the radio, or I should be on a phone. Or
it's whichever way you want. Barbara, do you have something to say?
Okay, I keep the phone on. Yeah.
You don't?
No.
First thing I have to say is, you know, your health is the most important thing. If you have some health issue that is causing your body to not be erect, I don't want you to force yourself into an unnaturally position which could end up hurting your back. Your health is much more important. What's going to end up, you know, posture is important, but more important is your competence, your people skills, your ethics, the quality of what you provide. So please don't hurt yourself, point one. Point two, yes, tall people have in general very often lean over because they don't want to seem like they're towering over people. But to the extent that you can, yes, it would help to be more erect. Now, one of the ways to remember a new habit is to one of two things. There are some people, you notice there are many people these days who wear a thread little bracelet or a little bracelet that they see, or even a rubber band around their wrist, and seeing it or even popping the rubber band as a little punishment every time they're not erect can help in developing the new habit. If you're still on the line, does that help?
Yes, I think it will.
Okay. I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
And Barbara, we just have a few seconds left. I got one more, and this one more of these side hustles I want to share. This Nick Loper guy from Side Hustle Nation said that he started a teaching kids to code business. There's so many parents who want kids to learn how to computer code, and he didn't want to do it all himself, so he hired local computer science majors to help out. Mm-hmm. Also, another version of tutoring that we wouldn't think of is everybody wants to do a podcast these days. He coaches would-be podcasters, would-be book authors. Any brief comment you have about any of those little side hustles?
Well, those are all cool. I think another thing that somebody could do if they're handy today is open up a makerspace after school and on weekends for kids.
I think a lot of kids who are less verbal and would like to work with their hands would like to do that. So mm-hmm. It's great that we end the show with your suggestion, and I thank you, Barbara, as usual, for being my co-conspirator here on Work with Marty Nemco.
Always a pleasure.
And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover, plus not obvious keys to starting and succeeding in a small business. Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.